Good morning. It's good to see all of you this morning. Hope you've had a good night's rest and recovered from all the input you had yesterday. It's an intense week. A lot to think about. I know when I go to conferences, it's so hard to process it all. Sometimes you just have to write down about three things that you're going to take home and act on and implement those three. Hopefully, I'll give you a few more things to think about today. I'm very excited about what I have to share this morning. I'm afraid the clock is going to be very unkind to me. But just want to jump right in as we talk about modeling and teaching the Anabaptist Christian faith in a practical way. And today, it's specifically talking about relationships. The relationship you have with your students is the core of what's going to happen in your classroom. The kind of relationship that you have with your students is going to determine how effective you are as a teacher. And so I'm going to share a number of things today that I do and have done. Some will make you think that I'm crazy, and that's okay. Because over the years, I've learned it's okay that people think I'm a little bit different. Because God has blessed me with relationships with my students that have been life-changing. And I never could have anticipated the relationships that I have formed over the last 10 years in education. And it's required sometimes me being willing to step out and be a little bit different. Today I'm just going to start doing something I love to do whenever I go into with a group of students. I love to break the ice. When I was in college and I would walk into a public school, that's a scary place to walk into, all these students staring back at you. How do you break the ice? You know, and if you're completely predictable, you're going to be on the defensive the whole day. And so I like to do something a little bit different. So what I love to do is walk into class with a big bag of candy. I'm not going to do that today, sorry. But I'd pull out these little cards. They're called Mind Trap. And I'd say, all right, everybody, get out a piece of paper and a pencil. I'm going to ask you a question. Do not raise your hand. Do not say the answer. Do not ask me to repeat the question. Write the answer down. And I'll just simply go up and down the aisles with my big bag of candy. And if you have the right answer, something will land on your desk. So, we'll start off. You think. If an airplane, since we have the Canadians around, I chose the first question having to do with the border. If an airplane carrying the U.S. soccer team crashed directly on the border between the United States and Canada, right on the line, in which country would the survivors be buried? Half of you got it already, the other half didn't. Write down your answer. No. In my experience, survivors become very irate when you try to bury them. It's fun. It gives the students a laugh. It makes them think. You know, and so I go around and hand out my candy, and give us another one. Give us another one. Okay. A black dog stands in the middle of an intersection in a town painted black. None of the streetlights are working due to a power failure caused by a local storm. A car with two broken headlights drives toward the dog, but turns in time to avoid hitting it. How could the driver have seen the dog in time? Somebody tell me. Yes? It's the middle of the day. We don't need any lights. So it's so much fun to just start out a class with something like that, throw a couple pieces of candy at them. Yes, you do have to deal with wrappers, whatever. That has worked for me in public schools, in Christian schools, in all different settings. Just a wonderful way to break the ice and to start the day. I want to start out today talking about the word rapport. Strange word. The dictionary definition is this: an emotional bond or friendly relationship between people based on mutual liking, trust, and a sense that they understand and share each other's concerns. Building a positive rapport is one of the most important things that you will do in your classroom. Why do we need positive rapport? Students learn best from someone they respect and like. Students can learn lessons from you if they hate you, but they'll probably not be the lessons you want them to learn. They can even learn from someone that they tolerate. But when there's a connection, a rapport, an understanding, this I trust this person, and I actually like this person, that it opens up many different avenues for learning. I want to hasten to say, many of you in the audience here are first-time teachers, and many first-time teachers go into the classroom and quickly set out to try and get the students to like them. And I want to caution you on that. At some point, I do hope the students like you, but it's not your job in the first 2 weeks to focus primarily on that. Students liking you should be a byproduct of what you do as a teacher. Your focus in your first 2 weeks of school is to do excellent teaching. As you focus on that job, and it's to run a good, tight ship, as you do that, students will begin to feel an environment where they can begin to relax a little bit. And as you teach well, you have well-prepared lessons. They're interesting. They're engaging. Students will begin to like that. And over time, the like factor will come. Your primary objective is not to get students to like you. It's a byproduct. Another reason you need positive rapport is students unconsciously imitate people they like. And as students begin to genuinely like you, they unconsciously imitate you, and it opens up a whole new avenue for learning. Because now, they don't even have to try to learn. They're learning all the time as they catch on to what you say. My oldest daughter, Sierra, has two girls in her class. They're twins. Both their names start with C, so I call them the C girls, or else the Seagulls, depending on the day. And sometimes Sierra will come home, and she'll have this funny accent, just the way she clips her words. And Sierra, where'd you get that? We figured out where that comes. It comes from the Seagulls. That's the way they talk when they're having fun. And so she comes home and imitates them. She doesn't need to try. We say, Sierra, you're imitating. And, you know, it's not a big deal. One of my best friends is an Old Order Amishman, and I just absolutely love spending time with her family. The thing that brought us together was hunting. I have a quicker set of wheels than he does, but he seems to know every Amishman in Lancaster County. So when we're looking for a spot to hunt, I drive, we pull in the driveway, he clamps his hat on his head, he walks into the barn and starts talking Dutch. And we roll down the windows and I sit out there with his boys and say, can you hear what they're saying? What are they saying? Does it sound like? And sure enough, he comes out, we have another spot to hunt. It works beautifully. But one of the things I discover when I hang out with my Amish friends is after a while, I sort of start to talk like them. I'll just be yakking, ach, vel, na, ach, what should we do next? And I'm serious. I don't try it. And all of a sudden, I hear what I'm saying. And I, oh my, they must think I'm making fun of them. And no, it just happens. I just absolutely love spending time with these people. And my daughters are even getting good at it. It's scary. We imitate people we like. And this is scary as teachers. You know, sometimes if there's words in your vocabulary or sayings in your vocabulary that maybe shouldn't be there, all of a sudden you hear students saying, where did you get that from you? It's scary. But as you begin to establish a rapport, it opens up a whole nother level of learning as they begin to imitate the people they like. As students feel that positive rapport, they are able to stop thinking about their safety. Our students subconsciously many times are thinking, especially in the first few weeks of school, about, well, will I be made fun of? Am I safe here? Sometimes in the earliest days, am I physically safe here, especially in the younger grades? And these are all distractions to learning. But as you build that rapport, they are able to immerse themselves in what you have to say and forget about themselves. And so it just, again, makes for powerful teaching. It helps the students to feel safe. And finally, a positive rapport opens the door for life-changing influence. I once heard a school leader from Ohio speak, and he said that he made up for his teachers buttons that said, "Follow me," in small letters, "as I follow Christ." That's our job as teachers, to be people that can wear a large button that says, "Follow me." Think about your own life. Can you safely say that? "Follow me as I follow Christ." It's not about me, but our students need living, flesh-covered examples of what it means to be a Christian. I'm one of these people that's especially notorious for that. I'm not a very original thinker. I need examples. And as I see people, I pick them out. Wow, that's a person that I want to imitate. That's a person that demonstrates the godliness that I want in my life. That's a person that demonstrates the teaching methods that I want. And I follow people who are following Christ. It's very hard for me to just take a concept and figure out how to flesh it out. And many of our students are the same way. I want to take a moment to go to Scripture and take a look at where the Apostle Paul comments on how we are to change our behavior in order to win others to Christ. As we realize that we should be able to safely say, "Follow me as I follow Christ," it brings a whole new level of seriousness to our walk and our work as teachers. 1 Corinthians 10. The verse I was actually getting at was 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. But my understanding is chapter breaks got stuck in somewhere after the text was written. And many times when I like the first verse of a chapter, you have to go back to the previous chapter to get the context. So we'll go all the way back to 1 Corinthians 10, verse 27. "If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and ye be disposed to go, whatever is set before you, eat, asking no question for conscience' sake. But if any man say unto you, 'This is offered in sacrifice unto idols,' eat not for his sake that showed it, and for conscience' sake, for the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof. Conscience, I say, not thine own, but of the other. For why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? For if I by grace be a partaker, why am I evil spoken of for that which I give thanks? Whether, therefore, ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God." In the classroom, the students get to watch you in every aspect, even at lunchtime, even when you're sipping out of your water bottle. "Give none offense, neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church of God, even as I please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved." Ultimately, that's why we have Christian schools, that our students may be saved. "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ. And I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the ordinances as I've delivered them unto you." Be ye followers of me. I love to hunt, and I spend a lot of time in the woods in the fall. It's wonderful therapy. And I'm very comfortable walking through all sorts of terrain in the woods. Once in a while, I'll find a spot in the woods that I really want to show my family. And so I'll get my family, and we'll stop there, and I'll find a little deer trail, and I'll shoot into the woods. And, you know, I get about 15 steps into the woods, And I turn around and I look back. And there's five ladies trying to follow me. You know, I just brushed through the briars, plowed through the poison ivy, and whatever all else, and I didn't think anything of it. But here I see a three-year-old ready to navigate a patch of poison ivy in a dress. And I see a six-year-old fighting with a briar bush. It's one thing for me to walk through the woods safely. It's an entirely different thing for me to walk through the woods in a way that my family can safely follow. In your youth group, you have many peers, I assume. But you're called to walk differently than your peers in the youth group. Most of them are walking by themselves. But because you've agreed to be a teacher, you've agreed that you're going to take on a different responsibility. And that is that you are going to walk in such a way that others can follow you safely. It's a lot more difficult to walk that way. I don't know anybody else that regularly stalks deer on the ground with a bow and succeeds. I love to do that. It's a great challenge. But I have a girl who's going to turn 8 this September, and she likes to see what her daddy does. And I told Starla that I think it's time Sierra gets a camouflage dress. I want to take her along. But it's one thing for me to sneak up on a deer. It's another thing to take somebody else along and get within 20 paces of a deer. As we seek to have others follow in our path, it makes it much more difficult. But it's the challenge that we've agreed to take on. If you earn that positive rapport, you will be a teacher that changes lives. My first grade teacher at Ephraim Mennonite loves to teach. She's been at our school for 23 years. And last year, my oldest daughter had her as her teacher. I can't say how much I appreciate someone like her who partners with Starla and I to affirm the values we have, to nurture a love of learning, and to just pour herself into those children. As it got to the end of the year, the students were talking about next year and the teacher, and she said, yeah, you're going to have to go into second grade. Oh, I wish I could go with you. She just bonded with this class. And they said, oh, yes, yes, please come with us. Go to second grade. She said, no, I have to stay in first grade. They said, well, then can we all flunk so we can stay in first grade? And they had this kind of conversation on numerous days. They're just connected. She has modeled what it means to be an excellent teacher and an excellent Christian. I'll reiterate. I'm going to talk a lot about ways to earn the hearts and the respect and the rapport of students this morning. But I need to reiterate again, as a new teacher, you're not going into the classroom to be their buddy. You're going in to be their teacher. And that is your job, is to go in and teach well, to run an organized classroom where students know the procedures. That's the first step. Again, the relationship buildings come as you do that first part well. If you are a lousy teacher and you do all these things that I talk about to build relationships, you will still be a lousy teacher. They need to go together. How do you earn rapport? The first thing to do is to understand this generation of students. I take some of the thoughts this morning from a book by Josh McDowell, The Last Christian Generation. In some ways, it's like the book that I talked about yesterday, Already Gone. It's another alarm call that says, in America, the Christian denominations are dying. And unless something is done differently, the Christian church as we know it in America is going to fade away. The thing that excites me about reading a book like this is I think we have a lot of the answers in our communities. But as I said yesterday, I see some of our young people running away from the answers. And that makes me very disappointed. Going to the book, The Last Christian Generation, I draw these ideas, understanding this generation of students. And one is, our generation is one that is very, very individualistic. This is the generation of me. Previous generations have thought about themselves too. I'm aware of that. But in America, as we become wealthier and wealthier and more spoiled, more and more our students are focused on me. Life is about me. Many of our students, as a consequence, put more emphasis on how they feel about something than what is truth. We're a feeling-based generation. And they're very pragmatic. If it works, they do it. If it works for you, great. Probably won't work for me. I'll do it my way. They're very pragmatic. And all of this comes together to equal a generation that responds very, very strongly and well to positive relationships. This is a relationship generation. In some ways, they're starved by some of the isolation that media brings, the current media. And so when they encounter someone who can truly pour their life into a student, they respond in amazing ways. Understand this generation of students. One of Josh McDowell's most famous quotes is, "Rules without relationship lead to rebellion." Rules without relationship lead to rebellion. I don't have a reference for that one. And ideally, it wouldn't even be that way. If we had the perfect world where God just, you know, gave a rule, or our church or our school just gave a rule, we would just obey because it was the right thing to do. But in this generation, very, very often, if there's not a relationship that goes with the rule, we get a rebellion. And I don't think it's too much to ask of us as teachers to build a proper relationship with our students. Rules without relationship lead to rebellion. A couple of quotes from Josh McDowell. "Christ does not need to be modernized to make him relevant. He is as relevant as ever before. The issue here is that the majority of our young people lack a relationship with spiritual mentors who are models of Christ-likeness. And these youths are building their faith and lives on a false foundation." You say, "But all my children in my school were Christian." Yes, but how many of them have their parent as a spiritual mentor that is connecting with them on a regular basis and speaking into their life and living out Scripture in a way that is open? I'll answer that. Not nearly enough. Many of our young people don't have that relationship, even though they come from Christian homes. "It's as if we are attempting to train our students to live by a set of Christian rules and do the right thing one topic at a time. We often fail to tie the rules to the relationship, which gives us the motivation to follow them. Rules were never meant to be seen out of the context of a loving relationship. This failure gives our students the impression that being a Christian is about correct performance, and thus contributes to their distorted view of what Christianity is about." I think that we can all agree that our faith walk is meant to be a relationship with Christ. But so often we make it something different. Our faith walk is a relationship. We need to understand this generation of students. Second of all, we need to learn to listen. While I was at Conestoga Christian School, a teacher from the local public school, Christian man, retired after 30 years, and he joined our staff. His name was Mr. Everhart, Larry Everhart. I wish I could be like Mr. Everhart. Mr. Everhart knew how to listen like few people I know. The students just cling to Mr. Everhart. Maybe it's because he's the tech ed teacher, but I think that's only part of it. When a student walks up to Mr. Everhart, he stops and he looks at him and he listens. Few people that I know listen like he does. I still stop by there every couple of months and always go to Mr. Everhart's room. And I'll walk in and, you know, he always has something he's doing. But he stops and he comes over and shakes my hand or gives me a hug and he listens. That is the foundation of a good relationship. Someone who knows how to listen. But not only listens, but also hears. Sometimes it's content the students are trying to communicate to you. They want to get you an idea. But other times, they're trying to communicate something different. They're really trying to earn your attention and just say, am I okay? Am I worth listening to? They're just looking for a little bit of significance. And we need to hear that too. And sometimes their stories are awful. And they go on and on and on. God bless you, elementary teachers. I don't know how you listen to some of those stories. But a lot of times it's not about how their dog got run over by a tractor trailer truck last night. But it's about hearing them and letting them know that they're important as a person. The second part of earning rapport and learning to teach is learning to speak. It is difficult to be a teacher. I don't think any of you will be great at this craft until you've had at least 3 years of experience. Because learning to talk to groups of people requires experience. You just have to make a bunch of mistakes. And when I was in public school doing my student teaching, I had like a rabid Democrat girl in one class and a rabid Republican. And I mean, these guys should both run for president. It was like Mitt Romney and Hillary Clinton. I mean, they were good. They could argue. And when I went to Conestoga Christian School, my administrator said, now you understand, we have a very diverse group here. Do you think you can handle that? And I'm just laughing inside. Lady, you don't know what I just dealt with over at Garden Spot High School. Well, guess what? I believe it's actually harder to speak to diverse groups of Christians than it is to speak to rabid Republicans and Democrats. Because there they understand there's going to be disagreement. But when there's people from different sides of the pole in Christianity, we all claim Scripture as our base, and it makes for very, very hot dissensions. And we have to be so careful not to unnecessarily cause offense. Learning to say, how are my words being viewed? And I'll hasten to say, am I perfect at this? Absolutely not. Last year I went and subbed in one of the classrooms and I said a sentence or two that I regretted and I just couldn't believe I had said them. Not terribly wrong, but I just realized they could have caused offense. And I just, it devastated me for an entire afternoon. I said, oh, how could I have said that? Not bad. But so easy to say a sentence that will hurt people unnecessarily. And to learn to craft your words very, very carefully. Learning to speak, learning to purge your language of condemning and offending words. Some people have more problems with this than others. Some people, it's just the language of the home they grew up with, where they speak with a little bit of scorn, where they look down. They easily say negative and hurtful things. And if you go into a classroom saying those kind of statements, you will cause a lot of hurts, and you will destroy relationships. You need to be very careful with your opinions. At some point, I became to the point where I was very loath to give my opinions in class. I would teach the facts, and most times, the students could figure out where I stood. But giving your opinions up front is a very dangerous thing to do, because the nature of opinions is there's several different ones, and they're not necessarily all wrong. But you create all kinds of controversy when you march into a classroom and start declaring your opinions. Be very careful. When you write, that's another form of communication, sort of like talking. Be very careful with writing. I had a scathing letter from a parent that I would have read yesterday if I had time, and an email I got, and someone who didn't appreciate our efforts to uphold standards in our school. And this father just wrote a scathing email to me. What do administrators do? I spent basically an entire day writing a response to him. Probably about a full page. But I didn't just hit send as soon as I got done. I sent it to my board chairman. I said, is there anything in here that causes unnecessary offense? And he gave me his feedback and sent it back. I sent it on to another board member who was privy to the situation and said, is there anything in here that calls unnecessary offense? And maybe you say I wasted time. That's fine. But our words are so important. They can have such long-lasting effects. I ask all of my teachers, when they're going to send a paper home, to copy it to me. It should be in my mailbox first, that I have time to review it. If there's any kind of a controversy or a potential controversy, and they're going to email, I want to see it first or at the very least be CC'd on it. It's always good to have feedback from another person, not to cause offense. How to earn rapport. Learning to be an example. I think I actually took that one out. Finding a style that works for you. None of you will be like me, and that's a good thing. All of you need to find your style that works for you in the classroom. For some of you, for me, I don't think it was till toward the end of my second year of teaching that I really started to find my style. And I struggled until I found it. There was a day when the students ate me for lunch. I brilliantly, since I couldn't put my finger on the two or three students that were causing the trouble, I brilliantly punished the whole class and had a mass revolt. And there was a day where I sat in my office with two administrators and sobbed my eyes out. You don't think I do that very often, do you? If you stand teaching long enough, you'll probably come to that day. But learn a style that works for you. And the thing that I've found in many effective teachers is that they learn to use the rubber sword well. You know, I found it very interesting as Howard got up here yesterday. He is a very intimidating position to me. And yet, it was interesting. In every 8 or 10 sentences, he just ended with a little dry note of humor in there. And it was so refreshing. It was like a breath of fresh air. And I found that most people that thrive in the classroom long term learn to use humor well. It doesn't have to be, we don't need to be rolling on the floor, but we need that breath of fresh air. And I love to call humor the rubber sword. It, many of you have heard it called the rubber sword because it's something that allows you to make a point without drawing blood. We need people in our communities that can wield the rubber sword well. I think many of our church splits could be avoided. Many are personality-based. If the folks involved wielded the rubber sword well. All of you either have been or probably will be in a time where you get in a confrontation with a student. And they are acting out. And they're defying you. And they're challenging your authority. And you look at them. And the room goes dead silent. And in my case, I remember a time when my ears, I could feel them turning warm. And time stops. And almost every time when I get in a situation like that in my first 2 years, I would lose. But over time, I learned to use the rubber sword. It didn't mean I let challenges to my authority go away. But I learned to diffuse them in a way that I could deal with them in my way, on my timetable. The rubber sword is incredibly valuable. I was in a meeting, and I'll give an adult example. I was in a meeting, a group of men, and those of you that know me well know that I am very big on respecting authority. But we were in this meeting, and a very godly man was leading the meeting. He was older and led it at a very slow pace. That's difficult for me. You know, when it's 10 o'clock at night, he lets a 30-second silence after one point before he starts the next. That's very difficult for me. There was an even worse problem, was another person at meeting was about three times as ADHD as I am. Also a very good man. But during those silences, he didn't handle that well. He'd be kicking me under the table. He would write me a note and pass it over, trying not to be terribly obvious, but we were just not handling these silences well. I went home after that meeting, and about maybe 3-4 days later, I got a letter in the mail from the leader of that meeting, a man I respected highly. It was a scathing letter. You were so disrespectful. How could you do that? I was devastated. And so I thought about it. I picked up the phone eventually, after a lot of thinking, and called him up. And with a voice that just quivered and trembled, I said, "Why didn't you tell me? I didn't know." And he said, "What? You were asking me to confront you in that meeting? I've never heard of anybody that wanted confronted in a meeting." And I realized he didn't know how to wield a rubber sword. Because he didn't need to say a word to me in that meeting. All he needed to do was look at me. And with a big smile go, "No nasty letter necessary." Or if you know, we were really carried away, noise level's getting a little high down there, could you just turn the volume back, please? It's over. The rubber sword is a beautiful thing. And learning to use that will be one of your greatest friends in the classroom if you learn to use it well. The clock is killing me also. I have to decide what to skip. I have a friend who's a teacher. He's in his 30s. Using the rubber sword takes different forms. And so I was with some teachers recently, and I said, you know, you don't use the particular tool that I just skipped, which I love to use. I said, well, how do you guys do it? And this teacher, who's in his 30s and does very well in a very difficult environment, he said, I always say it's tough to be 63 years old. It's obvious he's in his 30s. But a student says, "Mr. So-and-so, why did you do that? You forgot. You told us you ran." "Son, it's tough to be 63. You said you were going to answer my question next. I'm next. No. Hey, cut me some slack. It's tough to be 63. And he said he uses that probably twice a class period. all year long. I asked him, I said, now here's the big question. Next school year, are you still going to be 63? But he uses that so effectively. Such a simple thing, but it can diffuse all kinds of tension. I asked another friend that I was with, how do you do it? He said, I love to mix up words. You know, I love word plays, and I use them all the time. I'm constantly looking for them. You know, what did one muffler say to another muffler? I'm exhausted. And the students groan, oh, that was awful. But they love it. And he's just constantly rubbing them in their face. It breaks the tension. It allows a connection. Maybe if I run out of things tomorrow, I can tell you about my favorite. We'll see. Oh, I have to skip through that real quick. Practical ways to open doors with students. You need to earn the right to be heard. You need to do things that are beyond the call of duty sometimes. You know, the teacher that I mentioned earlier who made such a big impact on our family, you know, when I was away on a trip as an administrator, she's the one who called up my wife and said, hey, I'm going to be going over your way. Can I bring Sierra home from school today and save you a trip to go get her? That was huge. My music teacher, he could have just stood there and taught music, but this last year, he started a quintet of young men and has impacted their lives as this group, this quintet, has sung together some very unlikely candidates. They have begun to sing beautifully and have traveled and sung together. I like to raise dogs, have a couple of them, and boy, when I have puppies, they have a way of finding their way into school. And you know, for those of you that have a tough time connecting with students, hold a puppy sometime. You'll find yourself mobbed. Puppies do wonderful things. Include your family. Starla has been a wonderful support to me. And, you know, it was at Conestoga, it was a novelty when, you know, the Amish lady came in. But where I'm at now also, to just have my family come in, to have my children come in, to the end of the day, they're in for an event, and I'm walking the hallways before dismissal carrying one or two little girls in my arms. It changes how they look at you, and it allows a connection. Bring in your family, brothers, sisters, parents, whoever. Appropriately sharing your life with your students. Sorry, I didn't get that up. Appropriately sharing your life with your students. The next one is excursions with a purpose. And I'll tell you the one that I do. With students, I like to annually go to the, again, I love to hunt. I love to go to the Sportsman Show in Harrisburg. I'm kind of actually bored by the Sportsman Show, but it's an event that works because there's lots of boys in my school that love to hunt also. So typically, I shoot for about five. And I'll pick out three or four that are just absolutely delightful model students. Get permission to take them immediately after school, stop at a fast food restaurant and eat, and then travel up and look at hunting stuff all evening. The selection of the last one or two students, though, gets a lot of thought. Because every school has one or two really, really tough cookies. And I work very hard to sense the attitude of my students. And I don't know how much practice this takes to get there, but I think I could walk through my school, 200 students, and pretty well tell you whether I have a relationship with them or not by looking at their face. And I know when I have two or three that I'm not on the same page with. And this is my missionary trip. I get three or four excellent influences, and I stick one or two in with that group. And we go out for the day. And that has been a tremendous breakthrough at times in building relationships. They have overwhelming positive peer pressure. They see a different side of me. It's a chance to build a relationship. You figure out your own. Oh, one of my puppies that got around. There's Mr. Weaver, my music teacher, with his quintet. Bible quizzing, I used to, years ago, be the coordinator for my school, led about 5 Bible quiz teams. Great time to connect with students if you can coach a Bible quiz team. And there's Miss Burt, my first grade teacher, a wonderful, wonderful person who pours her life into the students. I'll try and wrap up just as quickly as I can. Since I drug all these tools up here, I have to explain them. One of my best ministry tools has been this table. My classroom, you got to arrange your classroom for teaching. And when I taught, about a quarter of my classroom was dedicated to micropong tables. Folks, connecting with students is so important to me. This thing has allowed a bridge because I love to play anything that has to do with table tennis. And when my students get to a break, I'm there pounding away at them. I even have a little trophy. I won a tournament. Oh, I took second place in a tournament one time. And I show them my micro trophy. And we pound away for hours and hours at recess. The students would leave after school. When I was at Conestoga, my room became the hangout. The students would come from across campus to spend time in my room and to play micropong for an hour after school. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I love to play table tennis. And that also allowed a tremendous connection with students. One of my teachers and I were preparing for a PR meeting on our high school, I asked him to write down some of the major victories, turning points in our high school. And he wrote this about table tennis. Our teachers adjusted their mindset. At one point, we tried to make school fun, but we said, you know what, fun is not a very good goal. Students will recognize the real deal as we make it challenging and they know they're learning. So he said, teacher mindset adjusted from fun to challenging led. Also around this time, we had the emergence of a table tennis club. I reflect on this at the time when Glendon and I had an awesome opportunity to build relationship with the guys in a non-teacher environment. We yelled, sweated, pounded tables, and most importantly, beat the guys in the competitions. I believe this opened doors for us to enter their lives and permitted us to introduce them to new areas of personal growth and development through future. I got a new student this year transferred in to middle school. He was a handful at his previous school. I knew he loved table tennis. I knew I had to beat him. And I don't do that because I have a terribly large ego. But students are not used to a teacher who can beat them at their own game. They're used to ruling. And when you can take an interest, you guys, and when I was sweat running off my face and beating that rebel, it makes him think about me in a little different way. And that student has given us, I don't think he made it to my office once this year. The relationship that can be built through those kinds of things is huge. I'll just show you a couple other tools very quickly here and I'll sit down. You know, I'm constantly looking for things that connect students. One of the students gave me a gift certificate to Cabela's. I went to Cabela's and I'm walking through and I found the electric fly zapper. It's like, I have to have this. So I go to school and it's killed very few flies, but it's zapped students probably thousands of times, you know? And you know, they say, wow, what happened? You know, and they say, did that hurt? No, it didn't hurt. Really? Oh, okay. Well, how about hitting me with it? Okay, yeah. Oh, okay. And then they're all lining up around me. Hit me, hit me, hit me, hit me. And you say, there's something wrong with this scenario. You know, as I say, hit me. I love the fly zapper. The Airzooka is a wonderful tool. How many of you do not know what an Airzooka is? Okay, you need to meet one. This, Steve kindly didn't steal my thunder yesterday in his science presentation. This could be used in science class. But it throws a ball of air across the room. Steve and I experimented with this. I think we blew out a candle at 30 feet with this thing. It blows a ball of air across the room. You aim at somebody, and here, watch Mr. Souter's beard puff here. There we go. It's a wonderful thing. You walk into the classroom and you start puffing students, and then now they're lining up and saying, shoot me, shoot me, shoot me. Doesn't sound right. But it's been a great tool for connecting with students. It made me notorious in the school as they went out and began shooting other teachers. They got banned, and I said, you can only keep these in my classroom, and both feet have to be inside the door when you're shooting it. Makes you very popular, by the way. And of course, they wore out mine pretty quickly, so after a while, they started figuring out where to buy them. They brought them in, and so then I didn't need to buy them for a long time. It was a wonderful thing. It's tools like that that allow you to build connections. You won't do it like I do. But to constantly be saying, how can I build rapport? It's as you connect that you will be given permission to enter your students' lives and speak to them about Christ and about what it means to follow the Savior. I had a whole other section I wanted to share on Obi. It was titled, Oh, Be Careful. I have personal stories I wanted to share. There is so much danger as you get close to students and they give you permission to enter their lives. There is tremendous danger there as well. Be very careful. Know your heart. And never give an opportunity for evil. Keep your classroom doors open. Make sure there's windows where you're at. I'll have to let it at that. God bless you. Have a good day.